afternoon, sir.
Yeah. How you doing, sir? Glad to be with you.
Thank you for the time. Obviously, we're talking about, I think probably here down the line, we're talking about an issue here that is very emotionally charged. Give me your sense of how these four amendments, none of which passed, give me a sense of the feeling on the floor of the Senate as these votes were taken last night.
Well, it was kind of an issue of, first of all, nobody wants terrorists to have guns. Nobody wants these mass murders. We don't want terrorists to have bombs or knives like they've had around the world. And I think that the gun issue kind of takes focus off of where the problem is, and the problem is radical Islamic terrorism. And what we're doing about that, and are we doing enough? Because it's quite clear what brought the person to do what he did, whether you go to his Facebook, whether you go to the 9/11 things yesterday, what he said as he was killing people, God is great, those sorts of things. So it's kind of that. And then when you get to the issue of guns, everybody's going to look at what the Constitution says about not only the fundamental right to own and bear arms for personal protection, but also that is a fundamental right, and due process ought to take place whenever any person wants to do something lawful under the Second Amendment, just like due process would apply for First Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment privacy, Fifth Amendment due process, plus Fifth Amendment being paid for government taking your property, any sort of rights that are in the Bill of Rights, every due process applies. And due process can't be compromised on fundamental rights. So it's a desire to make sure that we do what we can to stop terrorism, but the eye has to be on the ball of what causes people like this gentleman that killed so many people to act in the first place. And he got his guns lawfully. And if he couldn't get guns, he may decide to kill people like the Boston Marathon people did, or the ISIS people that killed people by knives in Paris about 5 days ago.
But the fundamental question, though, there is, you know, we have a Second Amendment. We have this right to keep and bear arms. There are going to be people who see then, and I'll include myself asking this question, as we see what happened in Orlando, or as we see what happened in Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut, a guy who acted with no connection to Islamic terrorism whatsoever, or Aurora, Colorado in the movie theater, no Islamic terrorism connection there. Sure, with Orlando, yes, with San Bernardino. The one commonality those is the easy and legal availability to military assault-style weapons. Is that Second Amendment, in a country where we observe a Second Amendment, where we uphold the Second Amendment, is Newtown, Orlando, and Aurora, and San Bernardino now just the cause of doing business with a Second Amendment?
I think there's three different answers there, if I can think of the three. Number one, the word military isn't accurate because the guns on the military can be shot, all of the bullets in a magazine, pull of one trigger. These are semi-automatic, and the only difference between what a lot of people was outlawed during the Feinstein outlaw of I think 2004 to 14. Was the difference of whether or not you had a stock and a pistol grip. If it was a pistol, you could semi-automatic, you could use it, but if it had a stock, you couldn't use it. Or, I mean, it was outlawed if you had a stock, but otherwise it wasn't. Then when you brought up about all of these mass murders that you did, and except for one of them, I think then you bring in a mental health issue. and that mental health issue needs to be dealt with, without a doubt. We have a conflict between the health privacy under HIPAA and getting names of people that are mentally have a mental issue, getting them in the FBI, in the FBI category, so they can't buy guns, and that's something that we got to deal with, and it hasn't been dealt with. On the other hand, you have a lot of people with a mental health issue, presumably based upon something that's not very legitimate. There's a lot of people in the FBI list that come from the Veterans Administration, people that probably use guns responsibly in the military, and if and the VA turns your name over to the FBI just simply because you have a third party handle your finances. Now they say that's going to happen through the Social Security Administration. So you're possibly being denied your constitutional rights just because, not because you're a danger to yourself or society, but because they determine that you have to have a third party handle it. And then the third issue, and if I miss something, you correct me. The third issue isn't whether your name should be on the list. It's whether or not you've been had due process to find out if you are on the list, why you're on the list, and if you shouldn't be on the list, a judicial process to get your name off the list. Because it's possible in Senator Kennedy's case, where he was on the no-fly list, he shouldn't have been, and I suppose he got off. But anyway, you can be on that list. You could be denied your constitutional rights under the Second Amendment to get a gun without due process. So the point is, in all these approaches to denying people guns, protect the constitutional rights of lawful people to buy guns, and deny that to people that don't have the capability or that's a danger to society.
And all of those issues, the ones you mentioned in regards to due process, and I know that your name was on one of the amendments yesterday dealing with some of these due process issues, whether or not you're on one of a handful of terrorist watch lists through the FBI or through Department of Homeland Security. If there are mental health issues where that may not prevent you from being a danger to yourself or other people, four issues dealt with this range of issues yesterday, and we passage on any of them, not a single one of them, just as we saw back in December. So there are going to be folks out there, Senator, who say, you know, this is as Shakespeare says, these are issues that are full of sound and fury, but they signify nothing.
Well, it's because of the rules of the Senate, where only in the Senate minority views can be prevailed. It's the only body of Congress where it forces bipartisanship, and that's why we have the 60-vote rule. Mine got 53 votes, but short of 60, and the others were all short of 60. But that's what forces compromise.
And I understand esoterically that's what happens, but there are going to be people who see, you know, this long list of mass murders out there with these kinds of weapons, with the ability to buy these kinds of weapons online, with the ability to walk into a gun show and buy these kinds of weapons unchecked, unfettered. And there are going to be people out there who ask an incredibly simple question, yet an incredibly complicated question, and that's simply, why? Why does this continue to go on? If we know these loopholes exist, then why aren't we working to close these loopholes?
Well, first of all, when you talk about loopholes, most of that comes up when you have gun shows. And most of the people that go to gun shows are commercial sellers, and you buy a gun from one of those commercial sellers, you've got to have the background check. Being at the gun show doesn't help you unless you're buying from one individual to another individual. So the only thing it wouldn't cover is if Chuck Grassley was going around the gun show with some sort of gun in my possession, and somebody says, do you want to sell that? Then in that one case, there wouldn't be a background check. But that wouldn't be any different than if they came to your driveway, Mr. Rice, and you wanted to sell a gun, and that you could sell it to your neighbor without going through a background check. So most of the guns at the gun shows are sold through commercial dealers, and there has to be a background check. Then the other loophole is if you buy it over the internet, somehow you don't have to have it checked. If you buy it over an internet outside the state, you can't have it delivered to your home. It's got to be delivered to a gun dealer, and then the gun dealer has to check with the FBI files to make sure that you have a right to buy a gun.
Is there an end game to all of this? Is there a point at which these issues are going? And there are a lot of people out there going to say, okay, so what's it going to take?
Well, I think right now you're leaving out a very important part of this whole debate. I've alluded to the fact that this is caused by ISIS, and the fact that this guy did all this in the name of God, et cetera, Facebook and 9/11 calls, and I don't know how many other places he talked about it. And right now, this debate isn't centering on the cause of all this. It's radical Islamist terrorism, and people want to focus on guns. Because I'm going to make a political statement now, because this administration has not fought the war against ISIS in an effective way.
Let's put it back to ISIS. What would be an effective way to fight ISIS in Syria?
Yeah, I think that the administration is fastly waking up to the inadequacies of what they've been doing for the last couple of years. And I think they're deferring more to the military people in the Defense Department. One move of that would be drones being more under the control of the Defense Department than under the control of the CIA. Then another aspect of that is more people to work with frontline people from Iraq or the Syrian rebel units. And having training, having intelligence that we didn't have enough of originally. And then lastly, having people that you might call spotters. That's not a technical term. That's my words. But spotters where the drones and our Air Force ought to do their damage so it's more effective. And then using more of that now. It's kind of a joke around town here. How many sorties you have of our U.S. airplanes that go out, and probably only a third of them launch any particular missiles because there's so much conservatism on the use of them for some reason. I don't know. Somebody would say it might be collateral damage or what, but that's where the spotters come into effect. I don't propose that we get into Iraq and Syria the same way that we were originally in Iraq and Afghanistan, but the president withdrawing all the troops from Iraq, as he did in 2009, left a terrible vacuum, and ISIS filled it. And Senator McCain's famous for saying that vacuum being filled by ISIS is a typical example of the failure of this administration's military policy in the Middle East.
So more troops? We should send more troops back?
Well, there seems to be more troops going over there by the dozens, not by the companies, like you usually think. But there's more troops going over there. But nobody's talking about getting 100,000 troops in there like we had at one time, but being more effective. But don't forget that words are very important. When the president doesn't, now let me make very clear, because I think this could be misinterpreted, because some of my senators have been caught at this. When you talk about the president not talking about radical Islamic terrorism, he doesn't want to use those words. Then they say you're accusing the president of what went wrong in Orlando. no, not at all, in my case, or their case either. But words are important. I don't think that President Obama means to do anything to assist the bad guys, but we do need to be clear who the enemy is. And in this case, it's a radical brand of Islam, and we shouldn't hide from that. And not making that clear to the United States and to the world can seem to allow radicals to hide behind the good name of Islam, and we're not fighting Islam. We're fighting the radicals therein.
President Obama, in a news or in a speech last week, thought he made pretty clear by all of the ISIS commanders that have been, or troops in ISIS, all of those combatants that he said have been taken off the field, that there was probably not a lot of question as to who it is that we're fighting and what the fight is in where ISIS is concerned. He said essentially, you know, I don't know that there are a lot of people out there who have a lot of question as to what the fight is. And this conversation then, to me, unfortunately, becomes kind of circular. Let's go back to something that was, if words matter, and I would agree with you wholeheartedly that they do, we have a presidential candidate who has pledged to ban Muslims from the United States, even though the gentleman who was who carried out the attacks in Orlando was born in the United States, but that we need to get tougher with those folks, including maybe going after their families, which is, of course, a violation of international law. Words mean things. Don't we risk on the other side of this of inciting just as much brush fire under ISIS, saying, hey, you know, maybe we'll go after your families next? Doesn't that radicalize them just as much as anything that happens on the Internet?
Well, whoever, whether a Republican says it or a Democrat says it or don't say it, what they say or don't say, words do matter. I think that, first of all, talking about Trump, I think that I want to make very clear that you can't have a religious test under our Constitution for who can come and go to the country. But for the first time in the history of our refugee program, we have had people around the world say that don't like Americans and Europeans, we're going to sneak people into the country under the umbrella of refugees, sneak terrorists in so that we can kill Americans. Well, that's a national threat that we got to take into consideration for the first time in our history of refugees, because we're going to take more refugees. But I think it's for the national security of our people, it's right to make sure that they're properly vetted. So I've taken a position that we shouldn't allow people in temporarily until our FBI and intelligence community can say that we have a proof positive vetting system so those terrorists don't get into this country.
What would that, what does proof positive though look like?
That's why Chuck Grassley isn't going to make that judgment. The intelligence community and the FBI is going to make that judgment. I couldn't describe it to you, and I don't. And that's the executive branch. I'm a policy making branch, and that's what I say should be the law. Now that isn't the law, and the president's going to move ahead contrary to what I just said. But I do disagree with Trump on the religious test. I don't disagree from the standpoint that we have a number one responsibility of the federal government to protect the American people, and we should do everything we can to keep terrorists out of the country. And we also have to remember that we have, according to Comey, we have 1,000 people in this country that they're watching right now that are either assets for ISIS, aiding and abetting, or they're a threat to terrorism within America that they're watching. And they said there's at least one in every state.
But and that's, it also points out an interesting dichotomy there, because we don't arrest people, we don't apprehend people, at least we say we don't apprehend people, for crimes we think they may commit. This is the dangerous, you know, the edge of this sword we live under this country, is that everybody is innocent until proven guilty, or until there is reasonable suspicion. this is, the FBI director says, you know, we're keeping an eye on these people. The brutal thing is we have to wait for them to do something before we can act, or we have to have reasonable suspicion that they are going to do something.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There was a law. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say it's the brutal balancing act that a country with the kind of freedoms we say we have to maintain that.
Sure, you can stand on the street corner and advocate the overthrow of the government. You don't violate any laws until you take action to do that.
Yeah, until you start inciting. So what's your email, voicemail inbox been like the last 72 hours in lieu of this vote yesterday?
I can't give you email, but I can give you telephone calls yesterday, and about 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I would guess that there's been an outpouring, though, of people reaching out to you.
Oh, yes. I think 400 or 500 calls, I believe.
Last thing, and then I know you're a busy guy. We'll let you go. We talked about the presidential race. I asked Congressman King when he was in studio with me yesterday. I want to throw this question at you while I have you here. Does your party's presumptive nominee, do you have concerns? Does he damage? Do you worry that he is damaging your party going forward, especially in down-term elections like Senate races?
Well, I think that regardless of who our candidate is, well, I mean, it's going to be Trump, I'm sure of that. But what you have to do, you can't have any control over running for president any more than I don't know that you ask Democrats, what do they think about all the problems that Hillary's got? She lied to the Benghazi family about the problems there. She lied about the FBI, she lied about the emails. The inspector general said that she had violated law. We know she's violated the federal records law. I don't know what Democrats' candidates are saying about that, but I can tell you how I would react to Trump. He's going to run his campaign. I said that I'm going to support him because I don't want a third term of the Obama administration with the slow growth we have and everything. And but I'm running for the United States Senate. I've got to run my campaign, and I'm working for Iowans, and I got to be it's got to be a disciplined campaign where I focus on my race. And when I agree with him, I'm going to agree with him. When I disagree with him, I'm going to disagree with him. And I'll agree with Trump on some things. I'll disagree with some on some things. One thing I can guarantee is that whether it's Trump, Clinton, I'm going to conduct robust oversight, whichever one of them end up being president of the United States. And that's where and I'm going to have to run my campaign. Like it's the most difficult campaign I've ever run, and it probably will be.
In regard to that campaign, very quickly, if the NRA offers you money in this reelection campaign for your campaign, do you take that money?
Well, I think they've already contributed to me. I don't know for sure. I'd have to go back. Well, you can call up my you can go to the FEC reports yourself. But I'm running my official. Leaving the campaign up to the campaign, but I assume that they contributed to me a year ago.
Chuck, we appreciate it. Senator, as always, we appreciate your time. We know you're a busy guy. We will talk to you again in July. Thank you for your time,
sir. Okay, goodbye.
I'm with Senator Charles.